Hi, this is Pastor Chris, and welcome to Strength for Today from Living Hope Baptist Church in Geneva, New York. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2020. What do you look for in a friend? Someone who is fun to be around? Someone who's clever, or athletic, or popular, or spiritual? I became a Christian in a mental hospital. I had been there almost a year, and then, in the midst of a particularly trying time, I turned to the Lord and put my trust in Jesus for salvation. And that was in January of 1986, and the Lord delivered me from the hospital and enabled me to rejoin, quote-unquote, normal society. My experience of salvation was that it transformed my despair, a deep-seated agony within my soul, into a mere depression, a biological phenomenon with emotional and psychical consequences. In other words, I found I still had a clinical depression, but being now in Jesus Christ, I had the spiritual resources to deal with it. And so I moved on, much as a person who has been maimed in an accident learns to live within a new normal. I got a job, then I returned to college, and I earned my bachelor's degree in Bible. I joined a local church, started participating in various ministries, but I was careful not to speak very often about the hospital. Mental illness has always carried a stigma, and frankly, I think it's understandable. Those with mental illness often prove volatile and unpredictable. They do things that are confusing and peculiar to those who are, well. There is still much about mental illness that is not or is poorly understood, and that which is not understood for people can be frightening, especially when there is the possibility that you too might have to face it, that you too might have the seeds of mental illness. So we see the guy talking to people who aren't there, or with the woman who counts steps and touches lampposts, or the man who screams obscenities on the street corner, and we shy away. This is understandable. Perhaps we fear these people may become violent and hurt us. Perhaps even worse, we fear that these people might like us and hang around us, pulling us down with their unsolvable problems. And perhaps we fear, too, that we again might have those seeds of madness within us. Regardless, fear, distrust, and avoidance of the mentally ill are common. Now, being mentally ill doesn't mean you're dumb. It doesn't take a genius or perfect mental health to recognize when people don't want to be around you. So, to the extent that we're able to hide it, those of us who are mentally ill often try to hide our illness. Let me pause here and make a distinction between short-term illnesses, terminal illnesses, and chronic illnesses. In my experience, most people can and will rally to the side of those who suffer a short-term illness, like a burst appendix or a heart attack or an intense depression immediately following the death of a loved one. Also, if someone is diagnosed with a terminal illness, then their friends will generally rally to their side, cancer or kidney or liver failure or something like that. But chronic serious illnesses are different. The needs are intense. Often the sufferers have little emotional reserve from which to give back, and they can prove to be, frankly, emotional black holes sucking up the support of others and still looking for more. And in this latter case, the depth of the needs and the indeterminate period during which those needs will be extant make the prospect of befriending such people daunting. No one wants to get bogged down with a permanently needy friend, do they? So as I said, being chronically mentally ill doesn't make you stupid. So when I started my new life, I did my best not to mention my struggles. I put on a happy face and I moved on, sharing my ongoing depression only with my friends and my counselors. And after college, I went to seminary. It was a good seminary, highly thought of, conservative in theology and devoted to ministry. In fact, at the time, my only criticism when I started attending it was that it might not be academically rigorous enough. I love books and study, and I wanted to immerse myself in the scriptures and theology. Then I go to one of the first chapels there, and the academic dean stands up and says this, "Gentlemen," it happened to be that we were mostly men there, he goes, "Gentlemen, ministry is about people." And I remember thinking, oh no, good grief, where have I gone? Where am I? How'd I get here? I did not really consider myself a people person. But I buckled down and I became part of the seminary. I joined some ministry groups, I made friends, and joined what they call a small spiritual growth group. those spiritual growth groups were actually clusters of 4 or 5 students to which we were assigned as part of our first class. We were to meet each week as a group and share our needs and pray for one another. This was designed to teach us to give the love and the spiritual care that ideally would characterize our future ministry. Because, remember, as the dean said, ministry is about people. In the meantime, I kept meeting with a counselor on a weekly basis, and he helped me to cope with the stresses of my chronic depression. Mental illness, in my experience, may be chronic, but that doesn't mean it is chronically bad. The severity of my depression waxes and wanes. Sometimes it's barely there, and other times it overwhelms me like an unanticipated storm that thunders around. Well, this seems a good opportunity to mention the value of medications. During my second year of seminary, I married my first wife, Mara, who subsequently passed away. But anyway, she was a nurse and had a sort of no-nonsense approach to illness. And as I shared with her my struggles, she urged me to talk with our family doctor about trying a new family of antidepressants that had just been released. And at her urging, I did. I started taking those meds, and in the third week of treatment, unexpectedly and dramatically, the dark cloud of depression that had engulfed me for years lifted and dissolved. Wow. All I can say is wow. Biology and chemistry are crazy things. Chemical imbalances can cause a world of hurt, but addressing them appropriately can bring a world of comfort. But all that came later. At the end of my first year of seminary, my depression rose up like a hurricane that engulfed me, and I ended up in a hospital. It was a good hospital. The unit I was on was a Christian therapy unit, and the psychiatrists and psychologists were born-again believers, followers of Jesus. And I was 9 weeks there, and it was hard. It was there that I first considered medications for depression. I think it was the comments of one of my doctors, a brilliant psychiatrist from Johns Hopkins. He said, "Look, Chris, you've been in 5 years of counseling, and if you were going to get better by talking about it, it would have happened a long time ago. But if it is a biological issue, no amount of talking or counseling is going to help you. You've been coping with your depression, but wouldn't it be great to eliminate the depression?" Well, I think here, too, a word is warranted concerning the use of the word depression. When I'm speaking of a clinical depression, I'm not really talking about the blues that all of us experience now and then. We're talking about something different, something that fundamentally changes the tenor or the shade of one's thinking. Anyway, so back to the unit. I listened to the doctor, and I agreed to try the medication. Unfortunately, as it turned out, the particular medication he suggested was something I was horrifically allergic to. The particular medication was to be taken daily. Each day, a portion of the med was eliminated from the bloodstream, but a portion would remain. And over time, with daily doses, the amount retained would increase until you reached a therapeutic level, and that level would be maintained. In my case, after several weeks on this medication, when I reached that level, my body burst out in hives. My hands swelled and tightened, and painful, itchy sores covered my body, literally from the soles of my feet to the top of my head. Even the inside of my mouth had hives. Walking was agony, and I stopped eating. My body twitched and jerked. To give you an idea of what it was like, I remember one day I stumbled out the door of my room into the hospital corridor. I walked 2 or 3 steps and then suddenly realized I couldn't go any further. I remember slowly crumpling to the ground and just lying there in misery. Sometime later, 2 shoes appeared in front of my field of vision. I remember opening my eyes and seeing those shoes, then following the shoes with my eyes to the legs, and then to a torso, and then to arms, and then up to a face. And there was a nurse who said, "Wouldn't you be more comfortable in your room, Mr. Pillay?" One of the other strange side effects of this medication was that I would cry. Not a wailing boo-hoo or anything like that, just a stream of tears down my face. Very strange. So I was a mess, and I met with the psychiatrist, who was a wise man. He said, "This is why we call it practicing medicine. It's not perfect science. Some meds are for some people, and some don't work at all with people." He said, "Taking this med for you was like crossing a busy street. Usually people get across those streets safely and just fine. But you got hit by the Mack truck." "So what do I do?" I asked. "Well, you stop taking it. Hopefully the effects will not be permanent." "Permanent? Wow, okay. I guess I should have read the fine print before. And yes, it turns out, in rare cases, the effect is permanent. Those poor people." So he said, You stop taking it now, and you should feel better in a week or two once it gets out of your system. What? Seriously, are you kidding? A week or two? This seemed too much to bear. No respite, an excruciating, clutching sensation within, involuntary jerks without. Hives with pain and itching, and darkest, deepest sadness that elicited streams of tears. It all seemed too much. I stumbled back to my room and I flopped on the bed. Misery. Seconds passed. Misery. More seconds passed. Misery. So you're probably wondering at this point, where is this all going, the story of personal misery? Well, do you remember the question I first asked? What do you look for in a friend? The Lord used this situation to teach me what is one of the greatest qualities you can find in a friend, and that is faithfulness. Faithfulness. You'll recall that I said that my seminary talked a lot about ministry to people, about caring for them and their needs. You'll recall I said I had invested myself heavily into seminary life. I had many friends, and I was well known and I think generally liked by my professors, as long as I was well. When my depression struck that year, it was just as the academic year ended. In fact, when it hit hard, I was traveling with the seminary's president and providing the special music for the conferences at which he was speaking. I even missed my last few sessions at the conference because I had to be hospitalized. All that to say that this hospitalization was not something that happened quietly during summer vacation without the staff, the faculty, or the student body of the seminary knowing it. I'm sure it was even mentioned at chapels and prayer meetings, and I suspect many people prayed for me. But none of those people ever came to visit me. There were four actually. My future wife, Mara, would have been there, but she was on a missions trip to Haiti, so three people. I had two fellow classmates who each came once, and please don't misunderstand, I did deeply appreciate their coming. But I could see in their faces the looks of horror as they watched me jerking around and watched the tears flow down my face. They excused themselves quickly, and they never returned. And then there was one other person, my friend Jeff. He came and sat beside me as I wept. He sat and we talked as my body jerked around, and then he left. And then he came back and he did it again, and again, and again, day after day. Proverbs 20, verse 6 says, "Most men will proclaim each his own goodness, but who can find a faithful man?" Yeah, I think that's true. Faithful people, people you can depend on in times of hardship, these people are truly hard to find. Funny thing, first time I met Jeff, I did not see within him this remarkable quality. He was a bit quiet, a little reserved, and I didn't see that we would ever become good friends. I have come to the conclusion that faithfulness is one of the great character qualities to be pursued, practiced, and perfected. To remain faithful to the Lord, to one's friends, to one's assignments, to one's world, this is a great accomplishment. Paul knew this. In his first letter to the Corinthians, he writes, "Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful." Paul wanted to be seen simply as a slave of Jesus and as one who had been entrusted with a precious, remarkable message, the gospel. And the one thing he considers it absolutely essential is that he prove himself faithful in the discharge of his duty in the proclaiming of the gospel. We should see ourselves the same way and have the same desire. There were many deep thinkers, gifted theologians, and talented musicians at my seminary. There were quite a few men who went on to fill big pulpits and lead big ministries. But there was only one Jeff. I fear that there are many in the Christian world who proclaim their goodness, but are not all that faithful. Certainly I might be wrong, but I suspect I'm not. Faithfulness is a rare, precious character trait worthy of being pursued, practiced, and perfected. Perhaps this is part of why the prophet declares in 2 Chronicles 16:9, "The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him." I suspect it is a rare commodity. The medication finally left my body, and my body recovered. But the lesson remains. esteem the faithful, value faithfulness. Today, I encourage you, by the power of the Holy Spirit, to endeavor to be faithful. Be faithful to God, to your family, to your church, to your country, and to your world. Be faithful in telling the others the good news about Jesus. Be faithful, because you know the best is yet to come. God bless.